Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. I hope you're very well. You're listening to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm Evelyn Charmer. I'm a paediatric therapist and I'm the director of Ed Elf Child Therapy Limited and its sister training company for therapists, the Child Hypnotherapy Institute. And I've recently been diagnosed autistic myself. So I'm very inspired to bring you a diverse and rich range of autistic voices from the community. People who are diagnosed, people who are not diagnosed, people who work alongside and collaborate with autistic families or autistic adults, people who identify as neurodivergent. Please come and join the conversation. I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at Evelyn, that's E-V-A-L-Y-N-N-E, at childhypnotherapyinstitute.com, or contact me via the show. Thank you for joining me with Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello, my guest of the week is Donna Hudson. She's the founder and director of becomingyourownboss.co.uk. And I'll let her tell you all about that. It's very exciting. But what it says on her website sums it up. It says freedom, fun, and finances for neurodiverse women. So welcome to the show, Donna.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, it's so good to have you on. I know we've had some really interesting chats. And I usually start the show with gratitude. And I'd like to ask you in a moment what you're grateful for today. And I'm grateful personally for, let me think, I think having a dog. Because I've had him for, I grew up with dogs and then I didn't have one as an adult. And I've had my dog as an adult now for nearly 9 years. And he's a great emotional support and he's great fun. And I don't think I've ever felt lonely in those years. Thanks. And also, it gets me out doing some of the things I love, like walking and getting out in the countryside. Yeah. So that's me. What are you grateful for today?
I'm grateful for the new day. I like to, embrace each new day as, okay, this is a new chapter today, as opposed to bringing in things from, you know, the past.
I think that's wonderful. Yeah, that is so lovely. And I know that you mean that, you know, you don't forget stuff from the past. It's not always easy to move on and things like that, but you try to take each day as a clean canvas.
Yes.
Yeah, a fresh canvas. Okay. So as I mentioned, you're the director of Becoming Your Own Boss. You work with helping neurodiverse women find freedom, fun and finances in their businesses. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered if you could tell our listeners what the core value of your work is and why you do it.
Okay, so the core value of my business is breaking the stigma of being neurodivergent. And for me, I just feel that having a business is stressful within itself. And it can be especially challenging being neurodivergent, trying to run a business, comparing it to neurotypical, you know, society norm, quote unquote. And so I have this passion and this desire to help these women, as far as I'm concerned, who are amazing, to step into their full potential and do the things that they love, have fun doing it, make money from it as well, and just have this level of freedom that you wouldn't necessarily have in a 9-to-5. That's really the core of why I do what I do.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. And as a neurodivergent woman running a business, mm-hmm. I totally resonate with what you've said there. And I'm not going to bang on about, you know, the trials and tribulations of that. And it's been very joyful setting it up as well. But there are, for me, I can sometimes deal with really complex concepts and projects. And then some really simple stuff about I don't know, working out things like, what does it mean? What does it, I get confused around language. So when I see written stuff about what can I claim back in tax, what I can't, I get really confused by that stuff. So, and then, you know, people kind of go, really? They think that you're just acting dumb or something. And yes. Like, no, that sort of stuff just doesn't compute for me. And because you can sort of sometimes manage some things really well, people kind of assume that you can manage everything really well.
Yes, it's very frustrating, yes.
Yeah. So tell us about your own experience of having been diagnosed and what you were diagnosed with and when.
Okay. So I was diagnosed when I went to university, and I was in a place where I had really decided that I wanted to make some, I wanted to do something with my life, because I felt that I was going around in circles. So I decided to go to university, and whilst at university, I was just struggling. I was doing the best that I could, but it just wasn't going the way how I wanted it to go. And I just sort of felt to myself, you know, what's going on here? Why am I struggling? And it was whilst I was walking one day through the corridor, I saw this flyer, and the flyer said, you know, are you struggling to get the marks that you expect to get? You know, you're putting all your effort in, maybe you are dyslexic. So I decided to myself, I'm dyslexic. This must be the reason why, you know, I'm not getting the marks that I want to get. And so I put myself forward to get assessed. And whilst I was being assessed, at the end of being assessed, the psychologist said to me, no, you're not actually dyslexic. However, and he started to ask me all these different questions. And then it turned out those questions were related to ADHD. He said, you have ADHD. And that's how I found out. So it was kind of...
And roughly how old were you when you went to university?
31.
Okay, 31. So you're not talking about 18, you're not talking about 19. So when you were an adult at 31. And what was your emotional response to finding out that you are ADHD?
At first I was relieved, because I finally found out, oh, so this is why I've been struggling. Because the questions that he was asking me, I've never been asked those questions before. So in my head, I'm thinking, what's the matter with me? You know?
Oh, right. Okay. So in the relief then was kind of like in an explanation for some of the things you found challenging. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So you said at first it was relief. What came after that?
And then I felt happy to know that I wasn't the only person who felt like this. Because all along before that, I did think that there was something wrong with me. You know, everybody else in the world is fine. Is there something wrong with me? I'm the one that has something wrong with them. So hearing that there were other people who also was experiencing the same challenges made me think, oh, it's not just me. This is, you know, a worldwide thing.
Interesting.
So I did actually feel happy. Yeah, but then I think later on I felt a bit discouraged, because I've now had to learn a different way of being. So that led to quite a bit of a frustration, because I've got to learn how to do things in a more aligned way, even though it felt uncomfortable. Aligned with the way that would work best for me. So for example, at university, I got a personal tutor based on the assessment that I had done. And the personal tutor said to me that the way how my brain is, I will not achieve very well if I try and cram things in at the last minute.
Okay.
So I have to start doing things much earlier, get everything out, whether it's jumbled up, it doesn't matter, but get everything out of my head. And then go away and then come back to it, go away, come back to it, go away, come back to it. And then that would be my best. Whereas the way how I've always done it is force myself to sit at the desk, get it all out of my head, get frustrated because none of it's making sense. why is this not making, you know, and I'm beating myself up, but that's not the best way. So trying to learn this new way of doing it, it sort of felt like it was a slow process. So that's where the frustration kicked in now with, oh, why is it taking so long? But it's like, no, but this is the best way for you. So okay. That's what I mean about having to adapt to my aligned way.
And did it work using that approach?
Yes, because that's what I need. So, yeah, I think for me, it was trying to understand that I've got to relearn everything.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Like yeah. When I spoke to the UK Health Radio people about producing this show, which I think is really important to get out, I got, you know, very little experience of using software and things like that. And I said to them, I'm going to need a 2 month running before I launch, because it will take me. And exactly what you said, I had to get it all out, look at it all. It's like getting everything out, isn't it, on the table. But I had to look at all the software, and I had to look at how it works and how to put it all together. And I had a bit of training. Obviously, you do it all from home. And it took me ages to sort of get all of those pieces formulated in my head in a coherent way. And I said, just, you know, that's how my brain works. But I promise you, once I've got it, I'll be able to do it. And then I'll always remember it. You know,
that's exactly it. That is exactly it.
I totally get that.
Once you understand, you're flying. But it's just trying to understand it first.
It's putting the pieces together, isn't it? It's like a big, massive jigsaw every time. Yes. You said earlier that you felt like there was something wrong with you up until you were 31 and this discovery happened. So what was school like for you?
School for me was, I mean, education-wise, I didn't like it. But school for me was fun because I used it as a way of escaping my struggles. So I was the class clown and doing all of these things, you know, to not do my work, not realizing why I was doing it. But for me, it was fun in that retrospect. But in terms of going to the class, sitting down and doing my work, it was terrible. It was really awful, but not in all classes. So if the teacher was engaging and made the subject interesting, and there was loads of, you know, variety in the class, I was okay. If another teacher was boring, quote unquote, because ADHD is either boring or you find it interesting. So if I found it boring, then that would be the class that I would be disruptive in. So, but this time now, I didn't know I had ADHD. So that's how I was coping in the classes. I was either behaving or misbehaving, either way. And I didn't sit I did sit the exams, but I didn't actually do them. And looking back now, it was because I was so overwhelmed. I didn't have a proper structure in regards to how to do the exams. And because I am also very sensitive to noise, so this is the part of the ASD that I have very, you know, hypersensitive to people clicking pens or movement, etc. I just couldn't concentrate. So exams I found very stressful, and I basically, because of it, left school without any qualifications.
Certainly, I'm probably a lot older than you, I don't know, but in my childhood, it wasn't even a word that existed. Neither was pizza, actually. So, you know, or the internet. So it's kind of, it's emerged, I guess, as I've grown up. I don't know.
But saying that, when I think from nursery, so when I went to nursery, they did actually say to my mum that they felt that there was something not quite right.
Yeah.
Because before going to nursery and before even going to primary school and secondary school, I've always been advanced. But for some reason, it's when I'm now in the classroom with other children, it's as if my behaviour just acts complete opposite to somebody who knows what they need to be doing. So it isn't as if I went into school totally clueless about these subjects, because I've always enjoyed reading, I've always enjoyed studying. It was just that the classroom and the you know, other children and trying to understand what was going on, that's where I basically was underachieving. And so they did actually highlight it to my mum all throughout my schooling. So from nursery, primary school, you know, secondary school, it was constantly highlighted. But as far as my mum's concerned, there's nothing wrong with her because she's bright, she's intelligent. So what are you saying here? And I think back then, having these labels was not seen as, you know, a good thing. Not to say that it's a, not to say that it's seen as a good thing now, but I mean, back then especially, it wasn't something that people would want to gravitate towards. You know, your child's got this thing wrong with them, you know, that sort of thing. So,
yeah, and I guess that comes from sort of what understanding is out there.
Yes.
In the world, isn't it? And what's put out into the mainstream,
yes,
about being neurodivergent. And I guess that's what I mean when I talk about how it's emerged more and more over the years. And I think what I'm talking about emerging is that it's a difference, not yes, necessarily a disability. And it might come, yes, alongside some people who are neurodivergent also have disabilities. And it's a very complicated thing. But and I think sometimes people think that, you know, ASD, ADHD, they're disabilities. Mm. And I know they can need additional support in order to reach your potential. Mm. But I still wouldn't personally term that a disability. And I guess that's what you're saying. Well, maybe your mum's generation was still in the... my child isn't disabled because she's bright, creative,
yeah,
chatty. She didn't have any delayed, you know, milestones, yeah, when she was growing as a child. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of our generation and probably above us as well, who have gone undiagnosed, yeah, maybe absolutely, forever for some people.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, with what you just said about disability, I actually don't like that term. And the reason why I don't like the term is because at university, I went on a project and the project was going into schools and encouraging young people who already knew that they were neurodivergent to tap into their, you know, potential basically and go after the things that they want. And one of the things that we was taught was it's a learning difference. It's not a disability, because a disability, that's like saying, you know, you haven't got a leg, for argument's sake, and you've got to learn to cope with it.
Something's missing, or there's a lack, or you know, that something's restrictive, or whatever. And I think what we're trying to say is there isn't a lack. It's just that your brain is different, and the way exactly that your brain processes information is different, and that will be different for every person who's,
yes,
you know, on any of these spectrums, really. Mm. Let's break for some music.
Okay.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, listeners. You're listening to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm Evelyn Charmer, and my guest of the week is the lovely Donna Hudson from becomingyourownboss.co.uk. Hi, Donna. Welcome back.
Hi.
Hello. It's really interesting chatting to you about your journey, you know, through school. I think you were talking a lot about, well, not a lot. You were talking earlier about becoming the class clown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And having worked in special needs education, I've met a lot of class clowns.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been that as well myself. For me, it was when I was starting to really struggle with O-level maths.
Mm.
And I'd been really good at maths all through my life, and then suddenly I hit a wall. And so I would just mess about and mm-hmm. make people laugh and get chucked out for singing.
Yes, time. Yes, yes.
So now I think the benefit of having done that yourself is being able to see that in others.
Yes, straight away.
Straight away. So it's like behaviour is a language. And if somebody is doing that, they're trying to avoid something, aren't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So tell me about what do you, how can we put this? What about potential reaching? So obviously you went to university at 31, which is brilliant. Mm-hmm. And you can go to university at any age.
Absolutely.
But why did it take you till then? And do you feel that you have reached your potential or could have reached your potential earlier in your life, maybe with the right support? Mm-hmm.
Okay, so university, which I'm grateful for, is where I got my diagnosis. So before going to uni, I was constantly feeling unfulfilled.
Yeah.
So I left school, like I said, without achieving any qualifications. So I was doing these dead-end jobs that I absolutely hated. So I was walking in and out of retail jobs. Back in the days, you could literally walk into a job today and start tomorrow. That's all changed now, but yes. That's how it was then. So I was constantly just in and out of jobs, didn't really stay there for that long, and was telling myself that there was a problem with the job. So I need to go to another job, because if I go to another job, then I will find what I'm looking for, not realizing I was the common denominator. So I'm just bouncing from job to job, just... One minute I'm excited, yeah, this is your job, yeah. And then, I'm bored. Oh, I don't want to be here anymore. I'm going to go somewhere else. And I just found myself going round in circles. I just could not get this fulfillment. There was something in me that wanted more, but I wasn't quite sure what this more was. And so I was just getting frustrated with myself, because I'm thinking, what's the meaning of life? Why am I here? You know, I'm just floating around aimlessly. Nothing makes sense. You know, why can't I get my act together? And, you know, all of these negative things that was just playing around in my head. And it was going on for years. And in the year 2000, well, before the year 2000 hit, I told myself, yes, the year 2000, this is going to be my big break. This is going to be the year where I will finally know what I want to do. And then I basically hit an all-time low. It was my lowest. It was my lowest. And I remember going to my doctor and saying, I don't understand what's going on. No, what's going on with me? I don't understand. You know, this is meant to be a good year and everything's going wrong. And I can't cope anymore. And the doctor said, you've got depression. So I was like, okay, so I've got depression. And then something inside of me, which I believe is the ADHD, had this determination to say, I don't need to take these medication. You know, I'm going to go and find out how I can get fulfillment rather than taking these pills. Because even though I feel good taking these pills, I still don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. So this is not really helping. I've got to find another way. And that's when I decided, right, I'm going to go back to college and I'm going to go and get a qualification. And I'm not leaving until I get one, because I believe if I get a qualification, then that will push me towards what it is that I really want to do. And so I done that. And then after getting my qualification, I then went to university. And then it was whilst I was at university, found out about the ADHD, and then went onto a project, which was to go into schools and speak to young people who were neurodivergent. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is my calling in life. Yay. To go and help go and help young people who, you know, need to be encouraged and give them the level of support that I never got. And then now I'm feeling, oh, so maybe this is what I'm meant to be doing. And then when I left university, I got a job working in a college, inspiring and encouraging these young people who were on the verge of being kicked out. And it was all linked with, you know, being neurodivergent. Some diagnosed, some wasn't. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. And then whilst there, I heard this little small still voice say to me, you need to have your own business. And that came about because I wasn't getting on with my boss at the time. I felt very restricted because as far as I'm concerned, I've now found what I want to do in life. And now I've got this boss saying to me, nope, you can't do that. Nope, you can't do that. You can't do that. And I was like, oh, that okay, I'm going to do my own thing, you know, that sort of thing. And that's really how I transitioned into my own business.
That's a wonderful story. And I have heard so many stories which are very inspiring. One of the reasons for doing the show Autistic Voices was to bring those stories to life for people, because I thought more people need to hear this. I've heard so many stories where people have had really challenging experiences and then they've gone through really dark tunnels and no one would wish that on anybody, you know. Yes. But coming out the other side, eventually they've been inspired and motivated to help other people. And that, to me, is just so beautiful, to take your own hardships and experiences and then turn it around into something positive to help somebody else, I think is amazing. So I love you for that. Mm. So how can we help children and young people today reach their potential, do you think?
Okay, so I think it's very important for young children to feel comfortable being themselves.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Yes. So I found out this year that I have ASD, you know, and spectrums of it. And one of the things that I see with the ASD is the common term masking.
Yes.
And I feel that if these young children were made to feel in school that they're okay being who they are, meaning that if you're struggling, you're not going to be, you know, looked down on, but instead be supported, then you wouldn't have to mask. You wouldn't have to pretend. You wouldn't want to fit in. You'd be comfortable being yourself and comfortable fitting in, being different.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
I think that says it all, really. And yeah, I've got a program of work I've been working on for a couple of years as in my therapy role, and it's called Congruent Me because it's a program that lasts a few weeks. But I really, really do believe that there are so many young people struggling with their mental health because their development, well, you know, in terms of their identity and their self-worth and their confidence, has all been linked to feeling like they've had to fit in to be liked and appreciated and valued rather than being met just as they are. And it being okay to be them. And I think that is one of the most destructive things. So that's the core of the work I do too. So that's really lovely to hear you say that. Mm. Okay, well, we've talked about your schooling. We've talked about how you've turned that around and into being something really valuable and helpful for other people. What advice do you have for other neurodivergent women at the moment in, you know, the times we're living in with the sort of, you know, struggles of there are people out there for whom, you know, basic needs are a struggle just to get food on the table and pay bills at the moment. The people out there who are having no choice but to start their own self-employment because they're, you know, maybe their jobs have gone during the crisis. And then there are other people whose businesses have collapsed during the COVID. So I don't think there's one answer fits all. but what do you find people come to you for advice on the most? What's the kind of common themes?
I think the common theme is more about them going after their dreams and not feeling like it's impossible. So one of the strengths that I have with ADHD is I'm very visionary. So someone can say, I want to do X, Y, Z. So for example, they may be struggling in a particular area. And if I say to them, okay, if that struggle wasn't there, what is it that you would like to do? And they may say, well, I would want to, I don't know, start a business for argument's sake, but then say, but I can't do it. You know, I don't have the time. I don't know even what I want to do. Straight away, I can see more on top of what they've actually said. So okay. So it's as if I'm, someone said the other day, I'm like an eagle. So it's as if I can actually look over what they've said and can see more than what they've actually shared with me. So I can actually help them to come up higher than them just saying,
what a gift.
I'm just comfortable being here. Yes. Yes.
That's a wonderful gift. Absolutely. Yes. Oh, that's lovely. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who go, oh, I wish I could do that. You know, that's a real gift that you're bringing to people.
Yeah. And people always say that I'm very encouraging and very inspiring as well.
Mm.
And when I said to you at the very beginning about what I'm grateful for, because of the depression that I had, it's helped me to be able to see someone else in a dark place and know what I'd want for myself. That's how I've actually learned how to be such an encourager. That's how I've learned to be inspiring to others, because I know what it feels like. So this is the empathy side now. I know what it feels like to be in a dark place. So every time someone says something like, oh, this is hard, I'm always looking back at myself and saying, okay, what would I have wanted someone to say to me when I found things hard? And that's how I've always been able to encourage others.
You're like a little light that shines in that dark tunnel and says, yes. you know, here we are. Yes. And I think that's absolutely lovely way to end the show, really. But before we do, just one last question, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
How do we tackle the stigma about difference? I mean, you know, it's a massive question. I'm not expecting me and you to solve the whole thing between us right now. But what's your thoughts on that?
Well, it's funny you asked that question, because I'm on a mission to break the stigma.
Me too.
Yeah, I'm on a mission. And my way of wanting to break it is to have this movement that being different isn't wrong, and allowing people to accept, so not just society, but individuals accept being different is actually something to be proud of. Because I use this analogy because I saw it one time on a Facebook post where it said, you've got different types of phones. So you've got, you know, the Android, the iPhone, and all these different makes as well. But they're all different, but they all still do the same thing.
Yeah, it's a good analogy, actually.
And yes, obviously some people may have a preference in terms of the phone that they gravitate towards, but this is not talking about preference. This is talking about the functionality of a phone, which is to communicate on. And as long as you are performing to the way how you've been made, then there's nothing right or wrong.
I think that's where we end. Donna, I don't think we could say any more than that. That's wonderful. So thank you so much for coming on the show. You've been listening to Donna Hudson, the founder and director of becomingyourownboss.co.uk, freedom, fun and finances for neurodiverse women. And people can contact you through that website. Absolutely. Or they can come to me through the show. Mm-hmm. And if anybody wants to come on the show and talk about anything that Donna's talked about today or raised, then please get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you very much. From Evelyn and Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. Thank you for listening. I'm Evelyn Charmer. This is Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. And special thanks to our guest of the week.